Welcome to Innovation Files. I'm Rob Atkinson, founder and president of the Information Technology and Innovation Foundation.
And I'm Jackie Wissman. I head development at ITIF, which I'm proud to say is the world's top-ranked think tank for science and technology policy.
This podcast is about the kinds of issues we cover at ITIF, from the broad economics of innovation to specific policy and regulatory questions about new technologies. If you're into this stuff, which I assume you are since you're listening, please be sure to subscribe and rate us. It really helps. So today, we're going to talk about autonomous vehicles, or AVs.
Our guest is Dr. Richard Mudge, who's president and founder of Compass Transportation and Technology. The firm specializes in economics, finance, and policy of transportation with an emphasis on autonomous vehicles and shared mobility. Dr. Mudge is a nationally recognized expert in the economics and finance of all modes of transportation. He's currently helping public agencies evaluate and deploy new technologies. Welcome.
Glad to be here.
Can you kick us off by defining what you consider an automated or autonomous vehicle? It's probably important to note we're not just talking about commuter cars here when we're framing the conversation.
The definition has been a little fuzzy. It's been changing. If you have a fully autonomous vehicle, it may be a vehicle that doesn't even have a steering wheel. You know, Zoox and other companies have built vehicles that have no steering wheel, so they are fully autonomous. You could have a vehicle that does not require a driver and would be fully autonomous. But one of the things that's happening, I think, is very important, is there are an increasing number of vehicles that have all the technology. If you buy a new car, it will have automatic braking. It will have lane tracking. It's not fully autonomous, but it has a lot of that technology in it.
And there's a lot of hype and some fear about AVs, and some might say deployment seems slow. Do you agree with that?
I think we've gone through several phases. One was something that I think is safe to call the world of hype. If you go back 10 or 12 years, there were people in the industry saying no one will need to have a driver's license. What turns out is this is much harder from a technological point of view to actually do this stuff. So it's taken longer. We're now in a world of skepticism for all the articles you saw 10 or 12 years ago saying you'll have an automated vehicle in front of your house in 2 or 3 years. Now there are articles saying it may never happen. And I happen to think we're about to be entering a world of reality where there will be automated vehicles in certain markets. So I'm more optimistic now than I was maybe 5 or 6 years ago.
You know, back in the old days when I was working at the Congressional Office of Technology Assessment, OTA, one of the final reports we did, although it never got published because they shut us down, but it was looking at this question of autonomous vehicles. This was 1994, 95. And what we had written, although as I said, we didn't finish the report, was that we estimated 2020 at the earliest before we'd even see some level of adoption. And we were over-optimistic there. I remember about 10 years ago, there's this website, this sort of futurist website that they asked me to be a participant in. And they'd ask these technologists and futurists to go in, hey, here's this new technology. What year do you think we'll have 50% adoption? And on autonomous vehicles, it was like, oh, between 12 and 13 years kind of thing, you know. And I was like 50 years or something like that. I was like 2040 at the earliest. I was just so far out in the range. And yet, I think that's probably the realistic number now. Do you agree with that, Dick, that it's going to take longer than people thought?
Well, it certainly is taking longer than people thought, but I think a lot depends on how you define it. And a lot of this goes back to the era of the world of hype, when the assumption was everybody would have a fully autonomous vehicle at their beck and call whenever they needed it. That's something which may take 30, 40 years before that happens. At the same time, there's a lot of applications out there that are going on right now with fully autonomous vehicles. They're just not things everybody sees. If you look at the mining industry, they've been doing it for more than 20 years. Walmart is now moving goods locally from a distribution center to a store. The Connecticut DOT will be having autonomous buses in operation later this year. There are automated small shuttles that are being deployed. So there's more of it happening. It's just not in the grand scale that everybody will have one at their beck and call.
So I was recently, I had to go to LA, LAX airport, and for some bizarre reason, where you get your taxi or your Uber is it's actually a fair hike. You got to really, you know, walk. And so there's a shuttle bus that you can take. There's absolutely no reason to have a person on that shuttle bus at some point soon. It's just the same route they take every single time. Would you see some of those as promising applications?
Absolutely. There are small buses, shuttle buses that have been used already at retirement communities, on college campuses, and they need a little more testing before they'll get into a public place like that. But you look at the companies that are the leaders in automated vehicles for the individuals is a firm like Waymo, which is owned by Google. You can get a fully autonomous vehicle at the Phoenix airport today. They just had I think their biggest success they've had was moving people around the Super Bowl. There's another company, Cruise, owned by General Motors, that is a little bit behind them. There's another company, Zoogs, owned by Amazon. So these are just getting started. But if you're in Arizona, you can pick up your Lyft app and call a fully autonomous vehicle now, today.
That's cool.
So it's starting.
Yeah. I also was reading John Deere has fully autonomous farming tractors and things like that.
Well, that gets back to what I said before. You have to look at specific markets. The farming communities have been using autonomous vehicles for a long time. John Deere gets the most press. They're probably the leader in it. But that's a place where there is no other traffic. It's simple to solve. It's like the mining example. You can have a fully autonomous mining truck, and there's no kids chasing balls down the street. The same thing with John Deere. So I think you'll find more and more specific market applications that will be out there where it makes sense to do it, but it's not this type of thing that you'll see pulling up in front of your house.
Interesting.
I know you've talked about the potential for AVs to stimulate economic productivity. Can you expand on this?
Oh, I think this is the most important thing out there. If you look at the history of infrastructure, there have been several things that have happened that have changed the U.S. economy. The interstate highway system is one example that accounted for most of the growth in economic productivity in the U.S. for like 20 years. You look at things like the internet and wireless communication, the same thing has happened. And there's the potential with autonomous vehicles to do the same thing. And let me give one example that's not there yet. There's a lot of money going into autonomous trucks. And once that happens, you'll be able to move goods across the country in 2 or 2.5 days. And that means you can have a business in Baltimore that will have a business partner in Portland, Oregon. And it totally changes their economic structure. It changes the economies of scale, changes the economies of scope. And that technology, that should be here soon. That has a massive increase in economic productivity.
You know, Robert Gordon, the well-known economist, I would call him an econo-skeptic or pessimist, because he wrote a book that basically said growth is over. And I was in a meeting, a panel with him one time, and he said that autonomous vehicles will have no impact on productivity other than you can read your email on the way to work. Clearly did not grasp kind of what you're saying here, Dick. You know, another one, though, you mentioned early on that a lot of the new, virtually almost all the new cars, if not all the new cars, have some level of autonomy, the lane tracking, automatic braking, and the like. You know, one of the things that we forget about, I think, in terms of the productivity numbers are the massive increases in productivity from not having as many accidents. Think about the auto insurance claims industry. That's going to go down. The body shop repair industry will see many fewer workers. Medical doctors and other things about treating people's injuries. So even without fully autonomous vehicles, these vehicles will end up being much safer. Do you agree with that?
Yes, I do. And I think that's something which has not been taken into account yet. And it's partly, there's issues about whether everybody follows what the technology is in their car. Consumer Reports has done some studies that show people like to turn some of this stuff off. We could mandate everybody having this technology in their vehicle. You would certainly save lives. The other thing that would happen, though, is you'd start to increase roadway capacity. If I go back when I was in graduate school many years ago, they talked about the capacity of a highway lane being 1,800 vehicles an hour. Now it's standard to talk about 2,000, 2,200. And what's happened is cars have better brakes, better acceleration. And as you start to have these vehicles that are being sold now being more common out there, you will have should have increases in the capacity of roadways. And that has true productivity gains around it as well. Yeah, very important.
Absolutely. You know, your point about people maybe turning them off, my wife's car finally bit the dust after a good long life. It served us well. And so we bought a new Jeep and called up my insurance company about it. And I did not get a discount for all of the safety features on it, including automatic braking. You know, it warns you when you pull out of your driveway if there's somebody behind you. It has a backup camera. It has all the bells and whistles, which are really, really great. And yet the insurance company did not give a discount. Now, I don't know if that was just the insurance company I have or whether that's something they haven't gotten to, but it would seem to me if insurance companies said, hey, by the way, if you're driving this car and you get in an accident and you've turned off your safety features, you're going to have to pay a lot more deductible.
I think that some of that will happen. I do some work for something called the Society of Actuaries. And these are the people who develop the business models for insurance companies. And actuaries are based on what's happened in the past. They want to look at the history, the last 5 years, the last 10 years. So the problem we have now is the type of vehicle your wife now has been around 2 years. There's no history of it. So I think that will start to change, but it will take a while. I bought a Tesla because I like the technology. My insurance bill did not go down.
Well, given the fact that a bunch of Tesla drivers seem to be thinking that it is completely autonomous and they can drive with their eyes closed and then they get in a fatal accident, and maybe that's the reason why. It goes to this other point that you have to have some level of, you know, humans still are going to play a role, at least for a long while.
Yeah, for a while. I'm not sure how long it is. Like for certain types of vehicles, maybe not. If you're driving a large truck on the interstate,
sure,
it's a special purpose highway. As I said, you're not going to have little kids chasing balls down the street, which you have to worry about if you're going to be driving in the local neighborhood. That's a defined geography. You're going to have an autonomous truck in that market. Now, those vehicles are not going to go into the city. They're going to go off the interstate for maybe half a mile and stop. So I think you need to find specialized markets where the technology can work. And there are quite a few of them out there.
What should governments be doing to help with deployment?
I'm a card-carrying economist, so I'd like to have the government do as little as possible. And so far, it has done as little as possible. You look at the recent Bipartisan Infrastructure Act, it barely mentions automated vehicles. There's no federal program for it. There have been several policy papers put out by the Obama administration, by the Trump administration, by Biden administration, and they all kind of say it's too early to have lots of regulations. But this is the point you raise is very important. You go back through the history of transportation, it's been a partnership between the public sector and the private sector, with the public sector being the leader in terms of building the roads, providing the transit technology that's out there. This technology, it totally changes that. The private firms really don't need the public sector to do anything. They want to make sure that the roads they drive on are safe, the roads have good lane markings, but they don't need a large public sector investment. Huge, huge change. And I'm not sure the transportation industry is fully, you know, ready for all that.
So, Dick, I know what you're saying in the sense of, you know, when you wanted to, you know, dramatically expand mobility in the U.S., you know, the private sector wasn't going to build roads. Here, we're not talking so much about roads. We're talking about the vehicles. And clearly, private sector is in charge of vehicle development, production, sales, all of that. I get that. But you mentioned the Surface Transportation Act. Well, it didn't include anything on trucking, including some possible demonstration programs or places they could test it, because in my understanding, the Teamsters opposed it and Congress gave in to their pressure against the job loss. So I know there's a program in Michigan that an old colleague of ours, you and I believe, is running to sort of have a test bed, be able to have companies go and try their things and also look at the issue of signage, which to me is a public sector role. What about those kinds of things? And you mentioned Arizona. That happens in Arizona because the government took a bold step and said, we're going to allow these.
Well, I think that what they're doing in Michigan, and it's going beyond that, there's a company called Cavnu, which and they have a very interesting business model. They want to build roads or lanes for automated vehicles. And I think by doing that, they'll be able to have greater capacity on it. I think they're also going to be doing it for, as I mentioned before, new cars are not autonomous, but they have a lot of the technology. And they're looking at, they have an agreement in Michigan with support from the state DOT to do this between Detroit and Ann Arbor. And I know they're looking at a lot of other markets. I don't think they've talked about which ones they are, but they're doing what, in some sense, the federal government should be doing. If you had a more aggressive, a more technology-oriented federal government, they should be doing more things, in my view, to encourage automated vehicles on certain lanes. Now, that would be a major change in how the federal government operates, so I don't think that's likely to happen. But what Cavnu is doing could be revolutionary. And again, that's something that gets no press.
Yeah, to be fair, you're good point. But you could imagine other states that have a very also a forward-looking attitude and partner with them and have their own special lanes and signage issues and just saying, hey, we're going to allow these more than maybe you could otherwise. In other words, you know, the federal government's, if anything, just sitting back.
I think that is happening. I don't know where Cavnu is working. I know they have projects they're going after in San Diego and a few other places. So I'm sure they are knocking on a lot of doors of state DOTs to try to get this done faster. And as I mentioned before, all new cars have some kind of technology. We need to be tracking that more. What's the impact on safety? How do we get more people to use the technology that's there? Because even if it's not fully autonomous, you have a lot of the technology you need that's in those cars.
Why do you think the DOT is, I don't want to say asleep at the wheel, but not as active as they should be in promoting as opposed to regulating?
I think they're changing a little bit. I think they're changing now. They're trying to do more. Part of the issue, and this gets into political issues, and it may show why I don't do a lot of consulting for US DOT. For a long time, to the year 2000 and on, Federal Highway Administration and a lot of the state DOTs were pushing for something called DSRC. They wanted to have communication between the vehicle and then the infrastructure, and they believed that that was the business model. And the same time, the people in the technology business, the Googles of the world, said, we don't need that. We don't need to communicate with the infrastructure. If you want to communicate with other cars, we'll use cell phones. So US DOT for some time spent a lot of time and a lot of money on a technology approach that really was not the way the private sector was going. And they recognize that now, and they're trying to be more aggressive in what they do. So I think their attitude today is different than it was, say, 4 or 5 years ago.
Interesting.
There's lots of worry about job losses. How should we be thinking about this?
Well, I think this will generate more jobs than anyone's ever seen. And people focus on jobs by looking at driver loss, truck drivers. And I think that's very limited. If you go back to the productivity gains that we talked about earlier, if you're able to increase the size of your business because you can now be a partner with a company on the other side of the country, there'll be many, many more jobs created. They may not be truck driver jobs, but there will be many, many more jobs. This will stimulate more jobs than anything else we're doing right now within the economy. There have been some studies done. There was a study that SAFE did several years ago that basically said there will be no loss of truck driver jobs for the next 20 years. In part because it takes a while for the technology to happen. And they did not look at the productivity gains that we talked about.
Yeah, and also, you know, people overstate the rapidity of which technology gets adopted. It's going to take a long time, as you noted, and there'll be a lot of, I believe there will be fewer truck drivers. But at the end of the day, that will be dealt with almost 100%, I would imagine, by attrition rather than actual layoffs. So trucking is a hard job, and they have a hard time getting people. So,
and this makes their job easier.
So, Dick, unfortunately, we got to wrap up. That was really, really interesting. I'm more excited about it than I was before we started. So thanks so much for being here. It was really great.
That's it for this week. If you liked it, please be sure to rate us and subscribe. Feel free to email show ideas or questions to podcast@itif.org. You can find the show notes and sign up for our weekly email newsletter on our website, itif.org, and follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and LinkedIn at ITIFDC.
We have more episodes and great guests lined up. We hope you'll continue to tune in.
Talk to you soon.